to item 8, and Peter, your turn, I hope. Peter does have a bit of a cough sore throat, so I hope you survive.
I hope you guys survive. Thanks, Chair. It's a busy time for the advocates, the LGPS violations run up and down the country. Sometimes it comes with a personal cost. So I left Glasgow yesterday morning. I started to feel a slight tickle in my throat, and as I went through the flight, I started to deteriorate quite badly. The main reason for telling you is not for simply that in case I start to cook, I'll be bit. Thank you. Yeah, cool. It's a brief report back on the progress of the 2019 Bangladesh. We do it every 3 years. Main outcomes is their contributions for the employers. I'm not going to go into these details, but how would I give you the overview or nutshell before we start? I would say the project itself is planning exactly as we hoped it would be, which is good. In 2016, we had a healthy pension fund. In 2019, we still have a healthy pension fund. You probably talked about it and heard it. Perhaps one thing about this time, I've always thought times were uncertain, but if anything, they're possibly a little bit more uncertain than they were before. But the agenda, thanks to the two buttons we jumped with them, it's a very good word really well, actually. I'm not sure I'm going to do this. It's progress to date, and then what we're actually reporting back. So what we're declaring to you today is the overall fund position, the health check, the funding plan. We're not going to tell you the contribution rate, things like that. It's the initial set. And to do that, we need to collect data, we need to make assumptions about the future, so we'll tell you what we've done there, and we'll tell you what it's actually come to, and what we've seen in terms of the development of the fund, the experience of the fund. Fairly brief, but then we'll remind you what hopefully some of you've seen before in terms of what the next stage is, which is the setting of employer contributions and the process we go through. Without actually doing the numbers, we'll see where we are in terms of the stage. And then finally, the next steps. So the progress to date. What have we achieved? So in terms of the council, we did contribution modelling a little bit in advance, based on 2018, to try and give early warning, to try to set where we thought things would be, give early insight into what we could, what we think would be appropriate for the council contribution. So we did that for them. But remember, we advised the fund, not the council as a scheme employer within the fund. Assumption setting, we've got a slide on that later, basically talked about what was appropriate in the current climate for various of the assumptions or informed guesses, if you want to use that kind of language going forward. We collected the membership data and the cash flow data. What I would say there is the 2019 valuation is a much smoother process for everybody in 2016. A lot of effort to commit as well into that from all sides, but particularly down here. And that's as much as we're talking about grey hairs. In my case, it's not grey hairs, it's disappearing hairs. The Isle of Wight pension fund this time has failed to remove much hair from my head. And then the initial results from the whole fund, that's what we declare it today. Yeah, I never stick to script. So what we're doing today is reporting back on the health of the fund. This is something you need to, if you want to know, it's good to have, but you also need to declare something. Not talking about contributions, but to do this we need to make assumptions. The difficulty we have is we have an answer, a single answer, that's what we will declare. Stock markets go up and down, that answer could be quite different 2 days later, a day later. You heard about how we magically managed to kind of wipe out the cost of transition by one day's movements. So remember, we're declaring the fund level 31st of March. This is what we're telling you today. It's an overall sense check and health check on the fund. It doesn't drive the contribution rates. What drives the contribution rates for the employers is the amount of assets they have, the investments we've got to get in the future, which are very uncertain, how their membership will develop over time, and that drives how we determine the level of contributions. So Peter, completely jumping ahead of strategy. So the health check, so on some basis, this is, it's what we built up today. So the key thing on this is the fact that we've got the assets today on the right hand side. Yes, they can wobble against the benefits earned to date. So all the members for the fund or for an employer with a tag owner, a service up to 31st of March 2019, stop, that's the benefit bill. compare it against how much money we have. It's a health check, we call it a fund level. Today we're going to declare the whole fund position. And it's quite sensitive. Not only is it sensitive to what day you do it on, because markets go up and down, but I can actually change the answer. As an actuary, I can make the assumption about the future investment return different. And it's quite sensitive. So I can change that. I can do it blindly, and therefore that will change the answer. Doesn't change how we do contributions. And this graphic is just, we have, the crosses are not anybody's done anything wrong here, by the way. It's an evolution of the approach about how we declare a fund. In 2019, we're trying to give more information and try to be very transparent about, it is a number, it is on a date, and it is based on a single investment return assumption. There are different things out there. You can change those numbers. If you go back 5 years, 10 years, however long I've been doing this, we were tending to put the actual on a pedestal. I would come along and I would tell you the investment returns will generate 4% for the next 20 years, and this will be the answer. This is how we are, and if you pay it, and everybody knew it wasn't going to happen, it doesn't happen. That certainty of a single answer. Now it's more about risk management, understanding what the position is, understanding the sensitivity of that position, how it can change, and understanding the alternatives of what the position would look like if you did different things. So I mentioned the assumptions. This is for the health check for declaring the funding level. So we need to, we're basically collecting membership data for all the members in the fund, for the employer. From that, we try and work out what the benefits will be paid out over the next 20, 30, 40. It's a long time. To convert it into a single value, to compare with the assets, we need to make these assumptions. Split into demographic and financial assumptions. On the longevity, which is the bottom row there, that's the only one there, the key assumptions that are put into the demographic or statistical side. The reason that's in there is this is always a, it's two stages. So one is what's happening now, and two, what do we think will happen in terms of future rates of premium. And some of the news over the last wee while has meant the actuarial profession, LGPS actuaries in particular, have taken the edge off in terms of the assumption about the future improvements. In layman's language, people live longer. What we are saying is that the rate of improvement is reducing because of some of the stuff that's come off in terms of information in the last few years. So our assumption about the rate of future improvement is lower, so therefore we need slightly less than that. And now if we go back to the stuff at the top, we've got the financial assumptions, you've got the 2016 valuation on the left, so you've got the 4% investment return, 2.6 of time increases and benefit increases to 2.1. So starting at the bottom, working our way back up, 2.1 is driven by the difference between fixed interest and index and gilts, markets are driving that, that comes to 2.3, 2019 is a little bit higher. It's still a low inflation set of assumptions, by the way. The salary increases, that's a combination of short-term salary increases and longer-term expectations. It needs to be consistent as a whole basis, so it still needs to be a long-term basis, and therefore it reflects a low inflation environment. And then the discount rate. So basically, there's a fall away. David used the phrase, what's the phrase, low for longer? Exactly, now low for a long time or something. Gilt yields are lower than they were 3 years ago. What you've actually got on the right-hand side is a description of how we've done it, and we'll see it in a minute. How we say, let's not just nail our figures to them. Let's not just look at the individual rate at 31st of March 19. Let's look at the likelihoods and the options. But what we've actually chosen at the end of the day is to declare a 3.4%, which is considerably lower than 2016, but doesn't impact on the health of the fund and doesn't directly impact on the contribution rates. Come to contribution rates again later. Okay, I think that's everything I wanted to cover on that, which is a statement of the assumptions we actually get. Now this is an interesting diagram I'm using it to explain it. One of my clients called it the witch's hat, which I've never actually seen before I actually did it. So what we've done in this particular chart is we're trying to set out that this assumption of 4% or 3.4% isn't the only answer I could choose. So therefore the funding company I'm declaring isn't the only thing I could choose. You have the investment portfolio. Talked about it quite a lot. If we look at the time 20, there's a range of potential returns from our models that we could get from our investment portfolio. And this is what that brings looks like. If you counted up everything in the witch's hat, the black space, that would add up to 100% of the potential returns. On the left-hand side, you have potential returns that are not very likely. On the right-hand side, you have the ones that are very good returns, but also not very likely. In the middle, where the green line is, you've got the average return. 50% of the time, returns lower than that, 50% is higher. So in terms of the LGPS regulations, I'm generally actually, I need to be prudent anyway, so I'm not allowed to go into the middle, so I need to go to the left-hand side. And the question is, where do you go? Yeah, and these two figures there, a 70% figure and a 75% figure. We've actually chosen, it's uncertain times, to be prudent, we've used 3.4%, and we'll see what that means in terms of the declaration later on. It's combined with the next chart, it's trying to show you that it isn't a single answer. And the next chart shows, and it's quite a bit of explaining this one, it shows the range of possible funding models. So, what do we have in this particular chart? It's quite a lot going on. On the left-hand side axis, you have the funding level. And the funding level depends on what investment return assumption you use. The investment return assumption you assume is on the bottom axis. So you can see the 3 going to the 5.2. If you assume a higher investment return assumption, you will get a higher funding level. And this you can see in both 2019 and 2016 with a slightly blue line and a slightly grey line. Terrible language, apologies. Slightly. Right. The point here from the previous graph is that as you increase the assumption about investment return, you reduce the likelihood of it happening. It becomes more unlikely. So you're increasing the bar for yourself to hurdle over. And that's shown in the top axis. So roughly the top axis, that likelihood of achieving that return reflects the return on the bottom axis, if that makes sense. So for instance, if we took the 4% investment return we had in 2016, you can see that we were 91% funded or whatever it was in 2016 off the gray line. So that had a 66% likelihood of success. If you were still using that investment return now, you'd have a 66% likelihood of success, and you'd be declaring a funding level over 100%. You could do that, but there's implications of doing that. As I've already said, it doesn't feed directly through into the contribution rates. There's also something called Section 13, which is kind of like Section 13 is a government action department. At the end of the valuation process, they come along and they actually collect all the information on the LGPS funds and they put them onto an apples for apples comparison basis. Yeah. So a fund can actually change what they declare there, but ultimately the true position or consistent position compared to how they look to their peers is going to be declared anyway. So that's something we need to remember when we're choosing to declare a fund. But you can see there, we chose a 90 whatever percentage in 2019. Of that choice of 3.4%, which is a 75% likelihood, which is a pretty high likelihood, which is pretty prudent. Okay, so that's that chart. And from there, if we do that, what is the actual position? What are we actually seeing again? So this is a whole third position, as I mentioned before. You've got your different categories of members at the top. On the left-hand side, you've got the 2016 balance sheet. On the right-hand side, it's 2019. So you're 92% funded. What we're actually seeing here is the liabilities have gone up with the passage of time. So that's people building up extra benefits. Benefits getting closer to town, so you've got the passage of time, rate of interest going in there. But on the other hand, you've got the assets also going up. Yeah? So that's good news. So actually, even though declared 3.4%, there is progression there in terms of the 95% funding level. The deficit is a little bit smaller. And what's actually going on? What's behind this whole fund 2019 result? The membership is pretty much developing as we expect. There's no real surprise, it's really assuring. The membership numbers, you've got over 14,000 members now?
15,000.
Okay. That's interesting. And in terms of that, so basically it's kind of growing a little bit, but it's also maturing. You've probably got more pensioner payroll than you had 3 years ago. Nothing alarming about that. That's what you would expect from the fund. And in terms of the experience, what are the key items of the experience that actually drive this result? Well, on the assets, the returns were about 30% over 3 years, which is way more than we expected, which is why you've got a jump in assets. Yeah, and that's great. And that cancels out some of the increase in the liabilities that comes from using a lower investment return. In terms of the rest of the stuff, again, with the experience, it's pretty much to be expected. There's nothing outlandish in what's happened in terms of the membership. Maybe the withdrawals, a few less withdrawals than we expected. Salary growth is a little bit higher, a whole from level, but not much. It's consistent with what we see. It's consistent with the low inflation environment. So the development of the fund is reassuring as an actor when you come along and see the result and try and explain it to yourself, and you say, actually, it's pretty much as where we thought we would be. So that's a steady as we go, a nice progression. You see that there's alternatives there. So we now move on to the contributions and how we do that. And the contributions are the key output from the 2019 valuation. So, and hopefully this might be for one or two of you, because we haven't changed this from 2016. The only issue that we probably have changed, or we have, it's been done to us, is probably a little bit more uncertainty in terms of the world that we are setting contributions in. And the LGPS, like pension fund, particularly the LGPS, is a long-term game. So when it comes to setting contributions, it's trying to balance things, and ultimately, depending on the employers, it's probably a judgment call as well about when you do it, which is fine. In this particular case, we're doing judgment in a world where there's quite a lot of uncertainty. So in principle, this hasn't changed. Basically, each employer, we want to know about them. We want to know what their long-term future is, so that helps them determine what their funding strategy is, what is the target, where are we going. Next, how long do we have to go there with the council, whatever it's at 20 years. If somebody is kind of like on a much shorter term horizon because they're on the way out of the LGPS fund, we reflect that. And then the next question is kind of like, how confident, what level of contributions do we have to set to be a certain degree of confidence that we're going to get to where we want to get to. And we have the different characteristics for different employers in the fund. We have these up and down the country. And I guess we try to collect the characteristics of these employers, understand them, and then we try and understand their experience as well as their career. What's the outlook for these employers? Well, we're kind of in the middle of that with the officers at the moment. But the general sense is that you've seen the gradual progression their healthiness, if you like, it's still there. So there's no bad news really, or shouldn't be, for the employers on the balance sheet. But the actual cost of benefits, as David said, is lower cost, lower for longer. If investment returns are going to be longer, lower, we assume 3.4 in the fund of plan check. That's probably going to mean a little bit more ongoing cost. So it's a kind of typical actuarial trick. We give with one hand, we take away with the other. One of the key things with employers, actually, for anybody who is from employers, is one thing you want to do is actually have better engagement with employers. I'll say about 2016, but we're just keen to do this. So we had 3 meetings with employers yesterday. If I can quote our meatloaf, 2 out of 3 were eat bad, weren't bad, whatever it was. 2 of them were very positive meetings, and the other one was, it was good to have that engagement. We maybe got a little bit of a journey to go around with that particular employer. But it was good. We're really open to that because we want to help employers understand their responsibilities, and we're trying to work with them to help them meet those responsibilities. So next, what can we expect next? Employer level results. We have the first meeting with the offices. We talked through an early cusp of the results. We are continuing to check the characteristics. We try to understand the results we have for the employers. We will look to engage with them. The idea is to issue the employers results along with the draft funding strategy statement for consultation in December. You can read this. We've already had some meetings. Eventually, we need to close things off by the 31st of March every year. 2022, that will be the next valuation. There's been uncertainty over that, but that seems to be the case now. And then a date to be seen. That's to do, I might get a whole presentation about pensioning and climate, which is quite impressive. One thing I mentioned briefly in setting employee contributions is that uncertainty. We've had the discussion already about Brexit a little bit. we talked about trade wars. So what I tend to do is I tend to put up a slide and put four pictures up there and tell people to guess what the areas of uncertainty are. Haven't got it here today, so I'll just tell you in the interest of time. The first one is politics. Well, we've already talked about that, whether it be British or worldwide. I've got hope that politics might impact on economies, and I would imagine that economies might hit on investments. But those are three areas where it's a very uncertain world for me as an actor, even more so than 2016. But the one that's slightly interesting is that we're also uncertain in terms of what the benefits are. And that relates to McLeod. McLeod is a challenge on the legality of the LGBS reform in 2014 to cut to the chase. It means that we're not sure if the benefit structure that the LGBS members are building benefits on today may change, and we might have to retrospectively go back to 2014. So as an actuary, what you do is you collect the data and make the assumptions and try and value the benefits. So what I'm telling you is we're not quite sure what benefits we are valuing. But don't worry about it. I've had the experience. It's rather sad, but it's not the first LGBS valuation where we've not exactly known the benefits. And in the scope of all the other uncertainties around it, the uncertainty on benefits, yeah, it probably has an amber rating on that rating. It's not as concerning to me as Brexit, politics, economics, investments, all that kind of stuff. Those are even bigger risks to me than the uncertainty around the benefit structure. And I do have my email address on the slides. You can send it to you, but my inbox is exploding at the moment, so I can assure you one thing, which is I'll probably see it, and it's probably about a 30% chance that I'll reply to it, given that I feel like it was this. Any questions?
All right, thank you, Peter. Any questions? Councillor Garrett?
Perhaps another clarification. First of all, I noted your Meeks Loaf reference you brought out there. Thankfully, it wasn't a hard life for you, and that's a truce. And other Meeks Loaf songs for those who aren't aware of Meeks Loaf songs. Coming back to that, which is how you described it, or somebody else has described it for you, can you just talk me through again, I may have missed it, my hearing's a little bad today. There's a modelling, so you've run a model over and over again with lots of parameters changing around. So what's, how many sort of iterations does that go through?
We use this in quite a lot of this kind of model to try and move away from the straight line world and try and inform the committees about likelihoods. So in terms of the modelling, in this particular case, David is more technical than I am. I'm more of a kind of like a frontman, kind of meatloaf talker. So I'll do the layman expression, and David, you can correct me more on top of if I'm talking tosh, as we technically say. And there probably is a meatloaf reference in there as well. So we build a model of the economy, is what we think may happen, and that incorporates financial parameters. It involves the characteristics of different investment classes, UK equities, overseas bonds, and that will be an expected level of return, the variability of that return, the correlation of that return with other asset classes. So we build this model, and then we press a button on it, and it generates a random future. And that random future will give us an outlook or potential range of returns over, in this particular case, as we said under the x-axis, 0 to 20 years. So I'm looking at a model, potential returns over 0 to 20 years, and then I do it again. I do it again, and I do it again. So I do it 5,000 times. And then, so when I talked about the average and median, unless I can't do the maths, that means 2,500 of these futures, or the returns from the model would have come on the right-hand side, 2,500 would be on the left. So I do that, and just, does that help?
Does.
Okay, to extrapolate that further, what we do with the council and we do with the employer results as well is rather than just give a single answer, we use these tools. So for the college, for instance, we will take the assets of the college and we will drive them forward for whatever time horizon we think appropriate, and we will generate 5,000 wiggly lines, I call them, of the college's pensions position. And looking at that, I will look at what percentage of them I want to be in a good place, and that is how I will set the level of contribution limits for the college, using these models to try and capture the uncertainty in the investment markets. Topple.
Yeah,
I think five places. I mean, we think that's enough that you've got enough outcomes across that line. So that's why we kind of pick 5,000, that it gives you a meaningful enough number of observations across that, which is happening. There's enough in the peaks at either side, and it gives you the kind of enough observations throughout that distribution. So
by adding more statistical experts, say if you take up to 10,000, 20,000, you won't get any information.
That's great. To what extent is that, indulging me, how close is that to a normal distribution,
do you think? it's not a normal distribution, deliberately. We use, I'll struggle to pronounce it properly, but it's heteroscedastic. So basically, we allow for the fact that we're trying to capture fat tails. Some of the extreme outcomes, so things like the financial crisis, was more of a kind of tail event. So we want to make sure that it's not a kind of normal symmetrical distribution, that we've allowed for what we think of the correlations. The fact that at times you might get higher volatility, at times you have lower volatility, so it captures that. So that's why it's not a normal distribution. It kind of goes between the different
parts. I think to top up on that, it's kind of like there's a significant range trust at Hyman's. That kind of like loves statistics, loves investment markets, loves doing this modeling. They are trying to capture, David, some of the past kind of experience you've seen in the past, and also using their judgment and brain power, if you like, to try and work out what might happen in the future. So other investment consultants will have models, but basically, you know, we're very comfortable with the quality of the modeling. But I guess fundamentally, David, we need to remember it is a model, and that is always the case with anyone. So, Steve, I have a question.
Yes, thank you. There are two quick questions on mine. I'm quite clear how salary inflation affects your model, because obviously salaries go up high in the short term as more money goes into the system, but obviously that's a long-term impact on the pension benefits going out. So I'm quite sure what the net effect of high salary growth is on the overall assumption. Secondly, your uncertainty around cloud judgments and associated judgments, is that likely to just have a one-off impact, or is it like to have an ongoing impact on the cloud judgment?
Okay, to take the second question, the McLeod of that, what we've used to do is we don't form any relief. So that remedy could be extending the protection to all members, as opposed to the ones who are older, or it could be rip up the rule book and come up with yet another LGPS version, or it could be the original point of reform was to actually try and make the LGPS work for both members and employers and sustainability. Actually, we put in reform, we're now being forced to increase costs, we could rip up the whole rule book. Now, that's kind of a nuclear option from the government side if you actually want to go down that. The remedy will reflect it, but when it comes along, I would imagine it has to work like this. We get instruction on what we do for future benefits, in which case, from then on, members will build up a different style of future benefits or a different level of future benefits, and we will get instruction about how we should correct stuff since 2014. That will be worked out, that will be a one-off change, that will impact on your balance sheet, and the rest, the first bit will impact on the cost and benefits of members. In terms of the first...
Sorry, can I just jump in on the cloud? Barbara and I were at a conference on, was it only Wednesday? Good Lord. And they mentioned McLeod, and there's so much uncertainty as to what the remedy could be. One of the potential worst case outcomes, potentially, could be that you have to assess every member against every scenario every year. So your annual benefit statement, your pension savings
I'm
statement.
I'm resigning if you have to do that.
Yeah, no, that's fine, I'm too. They were saying if you've got an 18-year-old member who's just joined the pension fund and you have to compare their benefits under a final salary scheme or a care scheme for the rest of their career, you could be carrying out this calculation every year for the next 60 or so years, and you don't know when they're going to retire. So it could be 2063 was the year that they said we might know the final outcome of McLeod.
But it was hard that anybody with any common sense who was negotiating this would have a mind on the admin implications. And I would imagine the people who were talking were probably people of admin minds anyway, which is why the 2063 year probably came forth from like Jeff Winston's mouth or something. Because that's his focus. Yeah, it's nobody in the right mind should.
Also, the other complication is that the Legislative Revenue and Customs are insistent that the tax liabilities are opened up to and they're looked at that 2014.
Yeah, so backdating PSA.
Don't feel cynical. Steve's second question, and I'm not quite, I'll try answering it, Steve. If I miss it, just come back to me. But the first question was about the level of salary growth and the implications of having higher salary growth. So the first question is, the modelling in which it has been talked about is reflecting futures of where we want to go to. To the extent that any employer has active members, to the extent that the people they have active members of money, that salary growth will go into that model. Is that projecting where we want to get to? And that salary growth will reflect the different weekly lines of the futures we have. So if we have a high inflation weekly line, we would have an active member in there with a high inflation salary growth. If it was a low weekly line, it would be like that. So that's, it does fit into the model in terms of how we capture and set employee contributions. The second element, which might be part of the question, is what does it mean if we've had slightly higher than expected, or slightly, in the last 3 years? Well, will we have got more money to fund because the payroll's been a little bit higher? Yes, we will. So there'll be more cash in the fund. But you've got to remember, so they've got 3 years of cash, but in the meantime, there'll be members out there with 5 years, 10 years, 20 years service who have a level of pension that has now been mostly family salary, been impacted on by that higher salary. So, albeit you've got a bit more cash into the fund, a higher salary growth is leveraged because of their greater service. So, basically, that's how it works in the short term in terms of the actual experience, and that's how it fits into the model.
I'm conscious of time. Are there any more questions on this? No. Thank you. You lasted it very well. We now go on to 9, which is the investment strategy modelling.